You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Happy Wednesday afternoon. We've got a great show for you this today and this afternoon, but of course, you're probably in line for a free burger at George Webb in celebration of Milwaukee Brewers' 12th straight win logged last week. You got just another hour to get that free burger in. I wish I was standing in line with each and every one of you. So go have some fun, grab a burger, and stay tuned all hour. We've got Brewers President and Head of Operations Rick Schlesinger joining us at 5:30. I've got some great questions all set up for Rick. We're going to have a fun conversation, but right now we're continuing today's theme of looking at Donald Trump, the data manipulator. It has been a problem since the first Trump administration, and on the days after the election, I called out that this was going to be an even bigger problem in Trump 2.0. But before we get into that and our special guest that's going to help us understand how Project 2025 told us all we needed to know about the fact that Donald Trump doesn't want actual competition or anybody looking at whether or not his policies will achieve the results he promised Americans who voted for him, I've got to give you a little breaking news. We've got more entrants into the 2026 election landscape here in Wisconsin. Secretary of State Sarah Godelewski today announcing that she will be running for lieutenant governor. That seat will be open because our current lieutenant governor, Sarah Rodriguez, is one of a number of candidates for the gubernatorial seat. Also, locally, Clark County is currently considering a resolution that would encourage local law enforcement officials to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, a move that many critics say will lead to racial profiling and wrongful detentions. Here's what on this. Been there and seen this action before, okay? This is the County Board of Supervisors in Clark County that's considering doing this. I have a little news for them. Dear Clark County Board of Supervisors, you know this, but maybe your constituents don't. Your resolution means absolutely hill of beans, nothing. Why are you doing it? You're doing it so that you can look Trump-aligned. Stop making it appear that you have powers you don't. Sheriffs in the state of Wisconsin do not have to listen to what county boards or county executives say at all. And police departments are run by the villages, cities, and towns, not by the county board of Clark County. So literally what they're doing will have no legal effect at all. It is purely symbolic. Knock it off. I hate it when politicians do that kind of thing. Enough of my rants this afternoon. A little breaking news for you. I'd like to bring on my next guest. We've been talking today about Donald Trump, the data manipulator. His name is James Goodwin. He is the policy director for the Center for Progressive Reform. And folks, we are going to drop the link to the analysis, the Project 2025 tracker that the Center for Progressive Reform has put out there. I want to say firstly to you, James, and all of your colleagues, thank you for that work. It is time-consuming and detailed. Folks, we will put the link to that tracker in our show notes for today. You can find that wherever you get your podcast. Just search for The Maggie Dawn Show. Click on today's episode, and that link will be in our show notes. You can also find that at civicmedia.us/shows. Welcome, James. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Data manipulation runs all through Project 2025. In absolutely every area you could think of, whether it's healthcare to economics, which we all think of as a data thing anyways. But it's all over it. And I've been squawking about this concern as a data wonk and an economist and a nerd myself since the day after Donald Trump was reelected. I want to go back and actually play a little bit of this sound, James, and then we'll get into where Project 2025 promised exactly what we're seeing happen here. Let's take cut 13. This is what I was saying in mid-December about this very problem. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to put this marker down as well. So remember this. It's 3:14 p.m. on December 18th, 2024. The thing, maybe not that I'm worried the most about, but easily in my top five things about Trump 2.0 is the absolute gutting and dismantling of our data collection systems and our data collection mandates in the federal government.
Yeah, I go into quite a lot of detail about this. I talked about it literally, I think, on November 6th. Here's me in February, still worried about this because we were getting a little taste less than about 3 weeks in. This is February 6th. Let's take a listen.
What we're seeing from government agency to government agency is data being scrubbed. They're putting up static PDFs. You cannot search the data. You cannot download it if the data is even still available. They're pulling down the research papers. It is like the entirety of the U.S. data collection, which, again, is done by, and I'm going to use this word with a lot of love and respect, technocrats and data wonks. Yes. And nonpartisan civil servants, public servants, who would provide this information to researchers and the public at large so that we could actually look at and assess what impact various policies are having, who actually benefited from Trump's 2017 tax cuts. Hint, it wasn't the middle class.
Correct.
I am so petrified, Tom, that because we're seeing it already. We're only 3 weeks in.
Yeah. So, James, take us through, is my alarm about this, you know, the firing of the BLS head, of course, is the most recent example of this, but is my level of alarm well-founded? And what, start taking us through Project 2025's attacks on different types of data. And again, folks, think of data in three things: data collection, data analysis, and then the transparency, the reporting element. Project 2025 and Donald Trump and his billionaire overlords are attacking all three of those axes that help us hold government accountable. Tell us more, James.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to pull back the camera a bit, Project 2025 is a blueprint for creating an authoritarian president, right? And what that means is dismantling or breaking down any conceivable checks or balances against what the president can do, including what's in the Constitution, Congress, judiciary, states, but also important social institutions, right? So things like the free press, universities, and of course, a big part of control, the kind of extensive control that Trump is trying to institute requires control of data, right? The objective way we understand the world and explain it to one another, because that goes a long way towards how we can spin the narrative about how his presidency is going, what reality is like, and essentially fool us against what our own eyes are telling us, right? And that's really, really powerful stuff. I think the other thing to understand is that government data is an important part of what the government has been doing since the founding, right? We all know about the famed Lewis and Clark expedition, data gathering exercise. Bureau of Labor Statistics, one of the first truly modern data gathering institutions within the federal government, was universally recognized as important for establishing America's modern economy, right? And the fact that these things are now under attack by the Trump administration, rather, is it's a really dangerous attack against our democracy, of course, but it's also going to have huge ramifications for the health of our economy.
Folks, that's James Goodwin. James is the policy director at the Center for Progressive Reform. Just talking about the BLS, here's what economist Paul Krugman said about it. Quote, this will be the total destruction of one of the world's greatest statistical agencies. This from independent journalist Isaac Saul. And Tony is worse than not qualified. Actually, he is an agenda-driven, untrustworthy, and wasting no time pushing to the limit the public's access to critical economic data. And, quote, economist Justin Wolfers said this, quote, put a useful idiot in charge of economic statistics, and we will suddenly get a reason to suspend our most valuable and reliable measures, just as the economy is slowing. It's cooking the books by erasing inconvenient numbers, indefensibly destructive, economically harmful, and markets will hate it. This reminds me of a saying, James, that I referenced earlier this week. Totalitarianism in power invariably replaces all first-rate talents, regardless of their sympathies, with those crackpots and fools whose lack of intelligence and creativity is still the best guarantee of their loyalty. I've made that argument here. The folks that Trump is hiring are those willing to trade away their integrity if they ever had it, or are too stupid or don't care about the fact that they are now peddling lies to the American public, and they have rendered themselves, by virtue of this lack of integrity, both in any form or to their discipline, rendered themselves effectively unemployable outside of the MAGA, alternate reality, right? On Earth 1.0, they won't be able to find a different job. So all they can do is continue to double down on the lies. When you look at Project 2025, James, is there one particular area that stands out as, or industry, federal agency where the attacks are more concerning to you? How should people approach this, and what should people be asking their elected officials about this?
You know, it's hard to sort of like pick your favorite child. It's hard to know which is the hardest, the most dangerous, right? But you're absolutely right. This is something that is woven into every single chapter of Project 2025. And for your listeners, it's broken down into agencies or substantive topic areas. Every chapter has some element of data manipulation tucked away in it. So in my substantive background is environment and climate. So you see a lot of data manipulation and control there, of course, with obviously how we measure climate change, whether we measure climate change, the impacts of that, how we attempt to account for it in policy making through something called the social cost of carbon.
Yes.
All these sorts of tricks to basically fundamentally alter how we talk about reality, and to do so in ways that are biased in favor of a particular agenda. And, you know, not only does that result in your immediate policy goal, you know, in this case, weakening regulations or eliminating environmental regulations, it also fundamentally changes the way people think about government and whether they can trust that data or not.
Yeah, if you thought folks didn't trust government before, just wait until the data is absolute garbage. Everything is relative. No one is accountable. There are no facts of reality. It's just whatever you feel. James Goodwin is going to stick around with us. He's the policy director at the Center for Progressive Reform. We're talking about Donald Trump, the anti-capitalist, the anti-free market guy, the data manipulator extraordinaire. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've been listening to me for a while, you know that I am an economist and a lawyer, worked in government for a long time, worked on Wall Street. And one of the things that is central to my sort of take on things, my view of what government should do, is that government should be efficient and effective. We may from time to time disagree about the objectives, but overall, most of us agree on the objectives. We want safety. We want to be paid fairly for honest work. We want our kids to do better than we have. We want our nation to be respected. We want to take a vacation every once in a while. We want to breathe clean air and drink clean water. These are the basics. And to ensure that government is both efficient and effective, doesn't waste your taxpayer dollars, You do that by analyzing policy. You do that by selecting policy based on good data analysis. There's a term for it, data-driven policy. Well, garbage in, garbage out. One of the primary tenets of Donald Trump's entire presidency is to claim anything regardless of the reality of the thing. And Project 2025 has been a roadmap on how to dismantle the workforce and the agencies and the divisions within executive branch agencies that are responsible for collecting the data that allows the public to hold government accountable. If we got garbage data collected, garbage data comes out in analysis. And even where we've had great data and analysis, as we know, Donald Trump's administration has been busily scrubbing that from websites and other government data reporting outlets. So he's also attacking the transparent reporting of data. Here with me to discuss the links between Project 2025 and Donald Trump's anti-data approach to public policy is James Goodwin. He's the policy director at the Center for Progressive Reform. One of the things that has been concerning to me, especially since billionaire overlord Elon Musk and mega corporations are clearly the ones that are benefiting the most from Donald Trump's attack on objective data collection, analysis, and reporting. When you look at whatever the justification may be, sort of folding agencies into one another and centralizing data collection, yeah, there can be efficiency gains. But if for a moment we assume that someone has an agenda, that they want to politicize data, when you start aggregating data and centralizing it, and you have a bad faith actor, does that, and it seems to me that that is a fundamental outcome that Project 2025 seeks, is the centralization of data. It makes it much easier to control who gets to see it, who gets to use it. It makes it easier to manipulate it, and it makes it easier for an administration to distort reality to Americans. And it certainly makes it easier for billionaire Elon Musk to use data to the benefit of unknown private actors like himself. Are these concerns founded? Are we seeing that centralization as a core focus of Project 2025, James?
Yeah, so one of the not accidental effects of Project 2025 is it creates the perfect conditions for just widespread corruption, right? And data control is a big part of that. So we have a law called the Privacy Act. It's been around since the 70s, and it basically tells agencies to not mix data that's been siloed, right? And yeah, that sounds really inefficient, but it's really important to, as the act is called, protect individual privacy. What's interesting though is Project 2025 says that the administration should vigorously follow the Privacy Act, right? But this was pre-Elon Musk, this is pre-Doge, right? So one of the ironies of tracking Project 2025 is you do come across these recommendations, you're like, well, that's not going to happen after all, because it's fundamentally against their interests. But, I mean, we're not idiots either. Congress has also passed a law to make it easier to combine data sets in responsible ways, called the Evidence-Based Policymaking Act. I can pretty much guarantee you that nobody in the Trump administration has ever heard of it, cares about it. But in other words, there are like legitimate ways to do what Doge was trying to do. And of course, Doge was not paying a bit of attention to it. Consolidating that much power or that much data control into a single place, we've known for 50 years, is a really bad idea. You know, we're challenging these things in the courts. They're basically allowing the Trump administration to proceed on these technicalities. But we're in a really dangerous spot, putting all these, consolidating all these data sets together.
The hacking opportunities as well, which, yeah. I mean, like... There is a reason that governments often run data analytics programs with redundancies, meaning it exists in numerous spots, and it's to avoid precisely this kind of problem. Folks, here's my action step for you all to take. I want you to call your local government officials, your mayors and your county executives, and I want you to ask them how they are working with universities and state government to collect data. Are they working on those partnerships? Because I think we need to take that from the feds and into the locals. There's some things that we'll never be able to replace, but they can be fixed in the next administration. But right now, we need universities and local governments stepping up to plug these holes. Because every American of good faith wants politicians accountable, which means we need good data, and we want to be able to test legislation to see if it's delivering the results that its sponsors and politicians promised us. Thanks so much to James Goodwin. He is the policy director for the Center for Progressive Reform. I'm sure we'll have another conversation about this. Coming up, we've got Brewers president and head of operations, Rick Schlesinger. Stay tuned. We'll have some fun right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. If you listen to my show at all, you know I am an obsessive Brewers fan, have been since I was a wee little gal, and it is so my privilege and honor to have back on the show for the second time Brewers operations head and president Rick Schlesinger. Welcome back, Rick, and thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Maggie. It's always great to talk to a rabbit fan.
Absolutely. I'll forgive you that you like the long pants. I'm still in the short pants camp. But what is the secret sauce? How is this miracle in Milwaukee happening? I don't think anybody could have predicted how fabulous this team is doing, the best of baseball.
Yeah, if I knew it, I would bottle it. I would sell it. I would become a billionaire. It's really, a combination of so many things. And, when you're talking about 162 games and you're talking about, between 40 and 50 players that come up to the major leagues and play for you during the course of a season, so many things have to go right for this to become, it's not a small hot streak. It's a 2.5 month period of sustained excellence. You look at the culture, you look at the coaches, you look at the front office and how they've brought people, the trades they've made for Priester and Andrew Vaughn, Woodruff coming back from the injury list, Jacob Mizorowski coming from the minor leagues and being dominant, all these little stories, and you take them and you add a good group of players that we won 92 games last year. And, there's the special sauce. It's the culture, it's the talent, it's the energy. You said something offline that I think is true, is sometimes, the youth of the team can work to your advantage. You don't obsess about what could go wrong because you may have not experienced failure. You're just enjoying the moment. You're focusing on then and now and not what could bad happen. And you're relieved and you're sort of free from some of the clutter that can, cloud your judgment or make you stress or feel the pressure. They're just enjoying the experience, enjoying playing, and it's a great team to watch, and we're having a lot of fun, for sure.
Yeah, when you joined me first, we talked about the Brewers' road to a series is the lightning in the bottle season, and I think a lot of folks are feeling like, man, maybe this is it. But I love the fact that every single guy on that squad, when you hear them in interviews, they all clearly have gotten the message from Pat and others and each other. We focus each game, one at a time, and try not to get overwhelmed by the moment. I really appreciate that. What sort of financial impact, how big of a deal is this for a smaller market club like the Brewers when you're doing so well? You got a breakout star in the Miz. You got a lot of attention, a lot of eyeballs, more TV time. Is this a big boon, and how much of a difference does it make?
Yeah, it's significant because, the biggest source of revenue for the team like the Brewers is ticket revenue. So when the tickets are selling, and obviously the variable price of the tickets are based on supply and demand. And for this weekend, we're basically sold out. We have very few tickets left for each of the games, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The few tickets we have left obviously are going to be more expensive than they were, 3 weeks ago or a month ago. The ticket sales have been fantastic. Our merchandise sales are off the charts. Our food and beverage, our parking, all the game day revenue is great. our engagement on social media, all the measurements we use, Maggie, to judge fandom, are really at historic highs. Our TV ratings were second highest in Major League Baseball among the 30 clubs. We have the number one social media engagement in all of Major League Baseball. This translates into, you know, sort of the great expectations that the fans have, which we want and we want to cultivate, helps us all ready for next year as we start selling season tickets and start planning for 2026. At the same time, you know, we haven't won anything yet. There's no prizes for having the best record on August 20th. You know, there's one prize, and that's winning the World Series. We have not done that. So a lot of meaningful games left to go. And, you know, invariably, we've got, 41 games left, plus as many postseason games as we can muster. There's going to be some heartbreak. There's going to be some challenges. We're going to go through a rough spot. But the end of the day is, I think this team is got some magic. And whether that's Euchre looking down on us or just some pixie dust that was sprinkled on us at the beginning of the year after the horrendous start in New York, who's to say? But, you know, we're going to have fun and ride it and enjoy the moment. And let's keep the moment going.
Absolutely. Folks, you know that we've got free ticket Friday, every Friday across the Civic Media Radio Network. You're going to want to grab one of those increasing tickets worth more because everybody wants to be at these games. I'm going to be at the game on Sunday. Can't miss this ride. You mentioned that the Brewers have the number one social media engagement. I follow the account. It is hilarious. It is entertaining. It is inspiring. You guys make great hay with things like Pat's Pocket Pancakes. And are those constructed, or are you just letting those moments happen organically and then leaning in? The excitement about the Miz, you know, Yelich using the Euchre bat earlier this week, all of that so inspiring. Is that just coming organically from the team and from fans?
Yeah, I mean, it to work, especially in the universe of social media, it's got to be authentic, and it can't be created, it can't be manufactured, because people can sniff it out a mile if it's something contrived. So literally, you know, I'm watching the interview that Pat Murphy gave, and the reporter asked him, and he literally pulls out a pocket from, you know, pancake. And I'm like, okay. And I thought that was funny. I didn't realize it would go viral. And then, you know, Pat's great because he's very genuine. He'll say what's on his mind. He doesn't have a filter. And the reality is these moments are really from him. And he's the team leader. He's important part of our brand. And when he comes up with something funny, we're going to go with it. And then obviously things like Yelly and the Bobby Euchre bat.
Yeah.
That was all Yelly. And we just decided, let's promote that. It was a great story. There's so many great little stories. You know, Andrew Vaughn, this guy from the White Sox that had been left for dead.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we trade for him because our pitcher wanted out, and he becomes, you know, Babe Ruth. So you can't craft it. You can't predict it. You ride it. And, you know, it's a team game, and these are team stories. And we're just having a lot of fun with it because at the end of the day, baseball, it's supposed to be fun, right? At the end of the day, we're not curing cancer. We're not saving lives. We're making things a little bit more enjoyable for people in Wisconsin, and let's have fun with it.
Folks, we're joined by Rick Schlesinger, the Brewers president, head of operations. Former GM Doug Melvin once talked about how the size of the operations department has expanded. We've got two guys on the roster currently from Venezuela, and Churio and Contreras. How has scouting changed over time, and how much effort and resources do you have to dedicate to that since you've really got to look globally for your next breakout star?
Yeah, I mean, it's an international game, and the game, as we promote the game, you know, internationally, you know, players start to play, and then that becomes, you know, potential players for us to draft and sign. So we have expanded our Latin American operations significantly. In fact, you know, we've got scouts in Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, Mexico. You know, obviously we keep abreast of what's going on in Asia. And frankly, as well as scouting, you know, all 50 states and Canada and Puerto Rico for all the college and high school kids. You know, baseball operations, you know, people are the lifeblood of our organization because they put the talent on the field. And the mission statement of the Brewers is to win the World Series. And those people are dedicated to that mission. And so, you know, our staff has exploded in terms of resources and personnel and technology. And we're building 11,000 square feet of new office space for them during the season because we literally don't have enough room for all of those guys. And women. Women and men are in part of the baseball operations. And that wasn't the case 10 years ago.
Rick, I'm always looking for my next great job. But all kidding aside, the commissioner of baseball has floated the idea of potentially adding two new franchises to the league. This would require all sorts of adjustments and realignments on many levels. What kind of impact would that have on the Brewers franchise, especially versus some of the larger market, higher payroll teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think realignment is something that we need to take seriously. And I think in a business that we want to grow and expand, I think, you know, increasing your market share, increasing your number of vendors is good. And there are many markets in the United States, frankly, that are worthy of having a major league team. And they've made a lot of noise about wanting to do it. And I do think it opens up realignment. If you have 32 teams, it makes it very easy to schedule because you have an equal number of teams. And right now, you know, some teams have a horrendous schedule on air travel because they're, frankly, in a geographic division that makes no sense. If you have a chance to realign, I would just say to the commissioner, we would like to be in the same division as the Cubs. It's a natural rivalry, and it's a geographic rivalry, and it's become more intense in the last few years as both teams keep fighting it out. So as long as we get to keep the Cubs in the division, I'll be happy with a realignment. The good news is the Brewers were very close to the Twins, the White Sox, the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Tigers.
Right.
You know, so I feel like realignment for us is going to be fine. In terms of the economic impact, Maggie, I think it's part of a larger discussion about how we can fix some of the economic issues in baseball, because as a small market team that the Brewers are, it's hard to compete with the revenues of the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Angels and some of those other big markets. And coming up with a system where the revenue is more equalized and not dependent on how many people live in your town, that would be a good thing for us. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of discussions and a lot of people have a lot of opinions, and I'm optimistic that we'll come up with a solution, but it's going to take a lot of people coming up and being very creative and being willing to compromise.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got with us Brewers president, head of business operations, Rick Schlesinger. We're talking about the miracle happening in Milwaukee and our brave Brewers. When we look at the Cubs, for example, they've got Wrigleyville and in this entire sort of area of North Chicago, very much part of the Cubs franchise. Packers have Titletown. We've got our incredible tailgating experience. I love the Bud Selig experience. Every time I go, I cry. Is there any thought to expanding that in and around our beautiful stadium, a Brewers Village of some sort, to try to continue to drive engagement in different ways with the franchise?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, one of my jobs is to generate as much revenue as I can for the team to give it to our GM to invest in players and player development and to invest in the ballpark. And certainly real estate is part of that. We have actually hired one of the chief architects of Titletown to help us sort of investigate the opportunities and to identify obstacles. You know, we have some special opportunities here, but we also have special issues. You know, we have a tailgating culture. We need a lot of parking for our fans. You know, we don't have a lot of population density that can walk here necessarily.
Right.
So when we're thinking of real estate development, we want to figure out how can we do something that works 365 days a year, not just on game days, and how can we make it attractive enough and diverse enough for people to drive and come here and experience, you know, the ballpark and all of what it has to offer around the ballpark. So absolutely engaging that discussion. I don't think we have anything imminent because there's a lot of analysis and economics and the ROIs and all that real estate development right. stuff has to get done. But yeah, we're certainly exploring it because if there's a play and an opportunity, we want to take advantage of it. Absolutely.
Well, Rick, if the Brewers are fortunate to get Milwaukee the World Series that it so richly deserves, you may have to speed up that planning process, my friends, because everybody wants a piece of the magic happening in Milwaukee. Folks, we've got the Brewers game this evening on a bunch of our Civic Media affiliated stations. Our broadcast now starts at 6:30. Don't miss it. And thank you to Rick Schlesinger, president and head of business operations for the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll be back with some more fun stuff on the other side because it's hump day and we got to get over that politics, over the hump and Trump this Wednesday here on the Civic Media Radio Network. So keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you know that we have not one, not two, not three, but five local civic media stations that carry the Brewers game first pitch in, I believe, the fourth of fifth games in 4 days between the Brewers and the Cubs in this marathon series. We've got five stations carrying that game. Our coverage will begin at 6:30. I mentioned it before. Our newest affiliate, WBZH, out in Hayward, CQM in Park Falls, ISS in Oshkosh, RJN out of Racine and Kenosha, of course, RCE out of Richland Center. I'm going to be watching the game, folks. Cannot wait. Maybe an adult beverage on this fine afternoon. Maybe I won't even watch it. Maybe it requires an adult beverage outside listening to the Brewers call on our local civic stations. Folks, have a wonderful afternoon. If you've got a story about one of your free George Webb burgers or a favorite Brewers memory, I want to hear about it now. 855-752-4842. Did you get your burgers worth? How many people were there? Was it an enjoyable experience? 855-75-CIVIC. Again, one of the things that you have heard me talk about is the fact that I think the Brewers are such perhaps even more than the Packers or the Bucks, there's something about the Brewers and the fact that they have never won a World Series that I think is super inspiring and engaging for Wisconsinites and Milwaukeeans alike, because it reflects how hard we work, frankly, how I think underappreciated, sometimes disrespected we are here in Wisconsin. So I think this is such a special moment for the team and the state and the Milwaukee area. I encourage folks to have some fun on this ride and lean in to the Brewers baseball fun a bit more. I've got a fun story for you out from just our neighbors to the east in Farmington Hills, Michigan. I wanted to share this with you because things sometimes are a little dark. In Farmington last week, apparently a very precocious four-year-old accidentally called 911. And proceeded to have a fairly extensive conversation with the dispatcher about his favorite sports and swimming. The dispatcher kept the kid on the line. They dispatched an officer just to make sure everything was well, and it was. It was just an accidental call. But they developed, the officer and the four-year-old developed a little rapport. The officer showed the kid inside of his cruiser. He introduced him to his brother, Mitch. So the kid was Micah and Mitch hanging out, checking out the cruiser. They talked about his love of soccer and swimming. And Officer El Hag learned that Mitch was celebrating his birthday this past Sunday. So the police department in Farmington Hills, Michigan, came together and they had a small crew of officers in their day shift go out and visit Micah on his birthday, which I thought was so sweet. This is according to WDIV. The officer came back with birthday presents for the young man, a new soccer goal, and a police cap and badge. And here's what the officer had to say. Quote, "I just did it for the kids, honestly. I just see my son there. So being a dad, I think every day, I can understand what that's about for me. I love the kids. And the city also pointed out that while accidental 911 calls do happen, we always want kids to feel safe and comfortable reaching out to us. So turning the small mistake by Micah into a moment of connection is what community policing is all about. And I wanted to remind you, in the spirit of baseball and community policing, Milwaukee police officers still carry around baseball cards. I saw one out on patrol last week, went up to him and said, "Hey, you got some baseball cards?" And he gave me three or four of them. So that's what I'm going to be doing, is asking our local officers for baseball cards. I think it's a great way for communities to get reengaged with folks. Terry from Cross Plains says that her husband stood in line for 20 minutes today for a free burger. And we got a freebie from R.P. Adler in Madison yesterday as well. And they even gave her service dog in training a free burger. I love that, Terry from Cross Plains. Thank you for sharing. Cam from Appleton says he is impressed with the scope of scouting now globally for the Brewers, and certainly is impressed by the Japanese fandom and talent development coming out of Japan. Yeah, that's one place I have never seen a baseball game in, but boy, that would be special. I've seen a rugby game in Hong Kong, but no baseball yet in Japan. I've got to put that on the bucket list. I'm also hearing from Mark in Prairie du Sac. He says he's got some friends that went out and got some burgers at George Webb today, and our very own Dan Schaefer, our political editor here at Civic Media. He's got a picture of himself enjoying a free burger. Folks, if you're not in line yet, you may be out of luck, because those free burgers go today just until 6 p.m. I remember my wait in line was not 20 minutes back in 1987 when I did this with my buddies. I think we were in line for at least a couple hours. Huge crowds back then. Listen, folks, that's going to do it for me today. I'll be back tomorrow with another packed show and great guests. Remember, I'll stick up for you and stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Go Brewers!
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.